Today's guest is going to talk about a topic from a report that he co-wrote. Zoning laws, housing fees, and lengthy permitting are helping fuel homelessness crisis. He is Kyle Sweetland. He's the only non-attorney I've ever had on from the Pacific Legal Foundation. He's a strategic researcher out of Arlington, Virginia, and he spent 8 years as a researcher for the Institute for Justice. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Kyle Sweetland.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And just before we came on live, he happened to mention that he's in Izmir, Turkey, and last week's guest was from the city, and now I can't remember. Istanbul. What are you doing over there?
I'm just visiting friends. I actually used to live in Turkey for a brief period.
Well, last week's guest, UCSB Economic Forecast Director, he just has a second home there, so he just happened to be visiting, and that's exciting. I'd like to do an interview just to talk about Turkey and your life living there. That's very cool.
Thank you. It's a beautiful country and a beautiful people.
Yeah, the guy in charge of Turkey, I'm a little concerned about. I hope he's not knocking on your door, but it's a little, you're rolling the dice there. But no, it is. I'd love to go. Love to go visit. Hey, before we jump into the topic, we had a follow-up emails, and California is one of, I don't know the number total, of states that will allow people to treat squatters as a criminal case rather than a civil case. And there were some pending states, and some went for it, some did not. But on top of that, 9 states went criminal that weren't even expected to in 2024. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Arkansas, Indiana, Kentucky, Maryland, Montana, North Dakota, Texas, Utah, and Wyoming. And so we got the others. California is one of them. So that's good news. If you're going to be traveling or you're going to be leaving your house empty, you do want to contact the local authorities and do a proper letter and file something so that if someone squats in your house, you can have an easier mechanism and path to get rid of them.
Exactly. That's the goal, trying to get people back in their homes quicker.
Crazy. Just crazy what happens, how people, you know, scam artists. So tell me, how did this report come together, and what does it encompass about homelessness, and what are some of the causes that, or what fuels the homelessness crisis?
Yeah, so the title of the report is Addressing Homelessness Through Housing Reform, and I co-authored it with Megan Jenkins and Mark Miller, who are also at Pacific Legal Foundation. And the thing that we wanted to look at is what is really the root cause of homelessness? There's been a lot of discussion recently about funding, and that's actually jumped significantly over the past 8 years. Funding went from about $5 billion a year when you talk about all sources of funding for homelessness in our country in 2017. About $16 billion in 2022. A lot of that came through COVID relief, pandemic relief funds that were meant to help prevent a spike in homelessness. And people are talking about whether or not that should just remain in place. But I think those conversations are distracting from what the root cause of homelessness. And research has found that the difference between in homelessness across the country in different regions of the country is explained mostly by the cost of housing, whether it's too expensive, and whether or not there's a shortage of housing in that region. And they actually control for other variables that you might think would cause homelessness, like mental health or drug abuse or poverty. And it was by far the cost of housing and the availability of housing that explain these differences in homelessness. So homelessness is primarily a housing policy issue, we found, not a funding issue. When you actually look at funding, there isn't a correlation that makes sense. In fact, the states that spent more addressing homelessness actually had the higher increases in homelessness, whereas the states that spent the least actually saw reductions in homelessness.
But conversely, are the states that spend the least spending money on increasing inventory or having programs like Section 8 subsidizing rents for people?
Yeah, at least not in the homelessness funding side of things. That's not what's going on. What is going on in these places, though, looking at states like Texas and Florida, they saw some of the largest reductions in homelessness. And comparing those to states that had the biggest increases, like California and New York, the differences in those states is their housing environments. Texas and Florida have had some of the largest housing construction in the country. Despite their populations growing, they've been able to maintain a rate of growth in their housing stock, and that's allowed rents to fall. Whereas other places, like in California, as you're probably very well aware, it's really difficult to build anything. And they just haven't been adding much to their housing stock as a result of that. Just government regulations are getting in the way. It's keeping that from happening. So really, those are the main things we're noticing in those states.
My guest is Kyle Sweetland. He's a strategic researcher for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Yeah, it's sad to hear you're spending more money and you have a higher homeless rate than states that don't spend more money. You gave out two figures. Was 2022 $16 billion and 2017 was how much?
About $5 billion.
And this was spent by whom?
By all states and the localities as well. We measured that, as well as the federal funding. So all sources of funding for homelessness.
We have some organizations here, county and city of Santa Barbara. The problem is it's so expensive to just build an apartment, but they have taken some paths of taking over like hotels and converting them. And the cost is extraordinary. I don't know why they just don't buy, you know, there's apartments for sale that cost less per unit than it does, you know, either building from scratch or converting these hotels. But I don't know why they do it, but they do. And I guess it's working. And but what happens is, well, we're in a cocoon here in Santa Barbara. There's, you know, we have the urban boundary line. So it's not as if, like with Florida, mm-hmm. you could just keep building out and building out. We don't have great mass transit, and they're infilling, and they're doing, it's just horrible. We have so much, we're just out of room, you know, we're just out of room, the traffic and water, and yet we're coming down the pike. There's high density in areas that people hate it.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly people may feel one way or another, but at the end of the day, if we're not adding enough to the housing stock in our communities, then homelessness, unfortunately, is going to continue to rise. So there are definitely, I know with California, for example, they have some of the highest impact fees in the country, and those are assessed when you're building new construction, and this raises the cost of building. You have the California Coastal Commission, which delays building a lot of times and adds new restrictions to construction. There are many other barriers that get in the way of building as well.
I agree. And I will say that I didn't mean to say that we shouldn't build. But the problem is in a small coastal town like Santa Barbara, there's just mm-hmm. not too many places to build. And it seems like everybody wants to live here. So the more you build, the more people will move here versus... And you're not building things that are very affordable. So I don't know how, but maybe it's not fair to discuss, you know, coastal towns like Santa Barbara because it's so expensive. I don't know what they're doing in the Inland Empire and where it's more affordable and where you have more mass transportation, where you could, you know, build subdivisions. But
yeah,
it's so problematic, like you mentioned, in California. So you're pointing out the fees and all this. So who's going to read this that's in charge and be able to perhaps make some changes in their approach to homelessness?
Yeah, well, certainly I think that the impact fees are assessed at a local level. So those are decisions, you know, that can be made by the county or the city, that you know, that would maybe be experiencing a higher rate of homelessness. Other things may be more of a state issue. For example, I know in California, they recently had passed a law allowing construction of accessory dwelling units. And they also exempted urban infill from CEQA review, the California Environmental Quality Act. And these are steps that the state has taken to try and make it easier to build in those in communities around California.
Right, right. They have. And then everyone locally is upset because of the infill projects, the density. And then many municipalities didn't have their housing element. So that opens them up to the builder's remedy. And there's just read in the city of Carpinteria, the same guy that wants to build behind the Mission in downtown wants to build an 18-story building in Carpinteria. I mean, it's just, mm-hmm. you know, you go from one extreme to another. You know, back when I got here in the 70s, there was a water moratorium. There's no state water. There was no building. Good luck. And people locally complain about local municipalities. It's true, if we had passed the housing element, wouldn't be subject to the builder's remedy, but it's the state legislature, it's the state that's making this happen, that's taking away control from local municipalities. So I don't know what's going to happen here. What's the homelessness like in Turkey?
That's a very interesting question. And mine is purely observational, but talking with some of my friends who live here, homelessness really isn't something that I've seen. I haven't actually seen a single homeless person in the years that I've visited this country and even when I lived here. And I think that that's a really important point, because why is having good housing policy translate into lower homelessness? It's a very interesting question. I think it's because when we have an excess amount of housing, we can allow the relationships that people have with family and friends, which in Turkey happens to be a very strong connection that people have. And it allows people who would maybe otherwise be homeless because they lost their job and they can't afford to pay their rent anymore, to be able to live with, say, a family member or a friend who has the space here to do that. And when you have good housing policy that keeps the cost of housing low, people can afford more of it. So to really come back to that point, homelessness is a housing policy issue. When we choose policies that are going to constrain the building of new homes and make it more expensive to build, people are going to respond by buying less and less housing and only getting exactly what they need. And in turn, that means they don't have the space to help people, whether that's family or whether that's friends who would be at risk of being homeless.
My guest is Kyle Sweetland. He's a strategic researcher for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Google Pacific Legal Foundation, and they're a tremendous organization fighting for private property rights, going all the way to the Supreme Court. I've interviewed numerous attorneys. And my dear friend Marilyn Senegals in Summerlin passed away about 15 years ago plus. She left a nice chunk of change to the Pacific Legal Foundation. She really believed in you guys. Last week's guest in Istanbul said Istanbul was getting quite pricey. Where is Izmir in reference to Istanbul?
It's about a 5-hour drive south. It's along the Aegean Sea, just like Istanbul.
Wow, that's a long way. I mean, if you're driving from end to end in Turkey, how long does that take?
Oh boy, if you're going east to west, I would say it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 hours. If you're driving north to south, I'd probably say somewhere around 10 hours.
Okay. So yeah, 20, well, it's still smaller than the United States, but it's larger than I thought. You know, it's interesting that you brought up the culture and, mm-hmm. you know, and why America and the United States, we do have more homelessness than, you know, I don't know anything about Canada, but I don't know why that is. I mean, you know, we have veterans who maybe become have some mental health issues, or you have some alcohol or drugs. But, and I'm sure there's plenty of families that do reach out, but it's very interesting why the United States seems to have people feel more isolated and abandoned, maybe. There might be some that are choosing to be homeless, but I think the vast majority are just trying to get back, get a leg up, get back on their feet. I certainly am not opposed to building housing. It might have come across that way when I was talking about Santa Barbara, because it's so tight here, though. It's just, and I don't think it's going to fix the problem, because it's they're building market rate homes. Some will be semi affordable, but not for some homeless persons to afford. So we're just a unique island out of the California and the world, really. So the state, like you said, is actually trying to change these laws. And I know you mentioned ADUs, accessory dwelling units, although I've read that a lot of these people are building them just for guest houses or maybe for some family, but usually like an older mother or father, maybe not someone who needs a place, who's become homeless, but a lot of them aren't renting them out. So it'll be curious to see where that ends up.
That's a good point, Mark. And the interesting thing is there are studies out there that show that when you build market rate housing, for example, which would not be affordable to a homeless person or someone who's, you know, maybe, on the margins and at the lowest levels of income in a community. But when you build that housing, that opens up housing below that would otherwise be occupied by that person. So you mentioned, say the in-laws are moving into the accessory dwelling unit or someone else, that means that home that person would have occupied is now open up, and that's still adding to the housing stock, and it is opening up homes at lower and lower levels. That so it is making it actually more affordable, and the research actually shows that to be the case. So it's not pointless. It's definitely very useful, even if it may not be being rented out to say somebody who is of lower income. Another important point with this is I think just allowing people to build, let them be creative with the type of housing that can be built. Accessory dwelling units are a great idea. Single room occupancy is another thing that is a lower cost form of housing that can be affordable to people who may be like making less money. Removing improperly assessed impact fees, like I mentioned earlier, getting rid of discretionary reviews that are just unnecessary and delay building. Allow the people to build. I think that's the important thing here.
I think if that was in place long before we are where we find ourselves today with these builder's remedy and all this crazy stuff, then we wouldn't have been in this problem. And as you mentioned, New York and California, last week's guest on homelessness mentioned, you know, New York, of course, has the highest density in the country, and it's not affordable. You mentioned single room occupancy, known as SRO. Am I correct? That's like a large hotel where you might have a shared bathroom and kitchens, but you just rent out as a rental. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And they exist. You know, it's ironic. We had something similar to that. They might have been full on apartments. Downtown Santa Barbara, just across from Nordstrom's on the corner of Chapala and Carrillo. And it was there forever. And boy, they kicked out all those people. And now we have a nice hotel with a rooftop deck. And I don't know what happened to those people. And I don't know if they made sure that they built something to accommodate them. But that's what happens. What about the new mayor of New York City? Wants to, I think he's actually mentioned taking real estate away from property owners and making them public housing. Have you been tracking any of his ideas, and will any of those work or come into fruition?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of things that are being said about his policies, and I think there's a lot of questions as to whether or not you can actually do any of those things. But let's take some of them, for example, like rent control. You know, the problem with rent control is it doesn't create any new housing. It doesn't do anything to increase the supply of housing. And it de-incentivizes people from maintaining the apartments they may rent out. People who are, you know, able to get this rent controlled unit don't ever give it up and may not even live there. They may just maintain it at the place that they stay at when they come to New York City. And so it's taking away actually housing from people that it's supposedly trying to help and de-incentivizing any sort of innovation. There's one really good quote that says that this rent control is the most effective means of destroying a city besides bombing. And that's true. And it's been tried before and in New York City. And it's gotten to the point where sometimes landlords had to burn their buildings down because they were falling apart and completely decrepit. So the idea that somehow this is going to help people is nonsensical. It's not adding to housing. It's making it unprofitable to have housing. So I think it's just one example of perhaps the intentions are good, it's a bad policy that doesn't really help people in the long haul.
My guest, Kyle Sweetland, strategic researcher for the Pacific Legal Foundation, and what you just said echoed what The Economist last week said. And of course, it's going to help a few people who are going to be very lucky, like they won the lotto. But like you said, in the long term, and you got to recognize the maintenance aspects of building an apartment and all that good stuff. So yeah, it'll be interesting. Maybe your next report should be about New York City and what's going to happen there. Kyle, we're just about out of time. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wanted to end up saying?
Yeah, I think, just that it's really important to stay focused on this issue. I really care about, seeing homelessness be reduced and finding effective policies that really help with this. And I think if we can keep our focus on housing policy and not as much on increasing funding or doing other things like rent control that just aren't really going to help at the end of the day. I think we can really focus on freeing up housing so that people can build more. I think we're going to be tackling this problem of homelessness in a much more effective way. So I'm really excited to see what continues to happen in this space and to see what states do to try and address this issue.
Well, thanks again for coming back on. Kyle Sweetland, strategic researcher for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Next week's guest is Governor Gavin Newsom, so I'll ask him all these follow-up questions, see what he has to say. Just kidding. Kyle, good talking to you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, take care. Take care.
You too.
Okay, you're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. We'll take a quick break, come back with Only in Santa Barbara. And that listing that I told you about that was subject to the tenants in common all agreeing to sell, even though it was listed, it closed escrow. I'll tell you the story when we return. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.